markets. And so all that is causing issues that is pressuring precious metals too. But ultimately, I think that we're in an environment where central banks still have to come back and create an inflationary environment, which should be very beneficial to precious metals, in my view. I think we had one of the biggest investments in the last month. I think we put money to work to a degree that we haven't done in any other month.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. Thanks for joining us for part two of our interview with analyst Tavi Costa. If you haven't yet watched part one of our discussion with Tavi, in which he shares his rationale for why commodities and the companies that find and produce them are well positioned for a historic boom ahead, head over to our channel at youtube.com/Wealthion and watch it there first. It sets the context for the investment themes we discuss in this video. Here in part two, I go deep with Tavi on his outlook for gold and silver and the mining complex. Tavi also shares the specific names of a lot of the companies he's investing in right now, so be sure to watch this all the way through. Okay, let's get started watching part two of our interview with Tavi Costa. So let's now turn towards the precious metals. You've mentioned several times here that you think there's great opportunity there. Sounds like you said that you are shifting even more of your capital right now into the precious metals space. So let's dive deep into the opportunity you see there. But maybe first, can we just talk about how, after hitting an all-time record high in March, gold and silver have basically kind of been on the escalator down since. So what's causing the current weakness in the underlying precious metals themselves?
Well, I think it's been the strength of the dollar relative to other currencies, first and foremost, and also the decline in treasuries and other sovereign bonds. I think that's been added pressure onto precious metals and other commodities. I think that has been a big part of it. Do I think there's a possibility of that continuing? We're long the dollar, and it's been a smart hedge for us when it comes to protecting that side of that commodity book that we have in the portfolio currently. So I think the majority of it, we saw sort of a risk off trade in gold and silver coming because of the war. The beginning of the war was what caused that rally in gold in particular. And then we saw platinum and silver also follow along, and some little bit of a move in copper, and certainly a big move in oil and other commodities. But we haven't had yet this part of the monetary disorder side of the thesis yet to play out. And I think it will at some point. I think we're yet to see the yield curve control. Adam, I do think that at some point, as yields continue to rise, I have a very strong view that yields, medium term will continue to rise in the long end. And when we see the Federal Reserve being forced to come in, i.e. what's happening with Japan is a great example, I think that will be the next leg of precious metals, what takes precious metals to very, very high prices that I don't think anybody's expecting just yet. So it's almost unavoidable that we're going to go there because of the imbalances on the issuances of treasuries and other sovereign bonds and central banks trying to restore their credibility right now with inflation. And so we're seeing the exit of the demand when it comes to those instruments, especially with 60 and 40 portfolios now getting hurt, folks being forced to sell left and right in order to meet margin requirements. And you have liquidation sell-offs in the equity markets. And so all that is causing issues that is pressuring precious metals too. But ultimately, I think that we're in an environment where central banks still have to come back and create an inflationary environment, which should be very beneficial to precious metals, in my view.
Okay, great. And two things on that. One is, first, I want to give you your proper kudos for the past 2 months or so. You've been pretty public in saying that you expected the U.S. Treasury yield to break above 3%. And there were a lot of people that were disagreeing with that And now you've been proven correct on that. So I want to give you props for sticking your neck out and sticking to that prediction and being proven right. Now, I just want to explain for people that don't entirely may not know what yield curve control is. And that's basically where the central bank, it would be the Fed here in the US, steps in and tries to prevent yields from going higher. They want to keep, yields from making capital way too expensive. And Japan is doing that right now, as Tavi just mentioned. And it's you can basically either manage the value of your currency, or you can manage yield curves, but you kind of can't do both. So what's happening right now in the US is the Fed is saying, you know what, we're worried about inflation. We're worried about that devaluing people's purchasing power. Folks are getting really angry because their trips to the grocery store and to the gas pump is really painful now. And so, we're going to try to get inflation under control. So the Fed right now is saying, okay, we're going to hike interest rates. We're going to make capital more costly, and that's going to destroy demand. And the U.S. dollar is strengthening. And Japan's the exact opposite, where Japan is saying, hey, we don't want our yields to rise, so we're going to come in and make sure that they stay where they are. And what the market is saying, right now, the market in the U.S. is saying, hey, we're concerned about inflation, so we're rising yields, right? And Fed's letting that happen. In Japan, since the Fed is tamping on yields, the market's saying, well, we're unhappy. We're concerned about how things are going on. If we can't influence yields, well, then we can influence the currency, and we have less faith in the currency because we're concerned about what's going on. And the Japanese yen has been devaluing substantially over the past couple of months, especially versus the US dollar. I think it's lost in the past year about 30% versus the US dollar, and most of that loss has come in just the past couple of months. So, Tavi, if I understand you correctly, you think at some point the US is going to switch over to Japan script, and it's going to start trying to keep rates from rising higher. And that's when the dollar will probably start devaluing, at least versus gold, correct?
Yes, I believe in that. I think that's going to be one of the cases. I mean, we saw back in coming out of the 40s something similar. Today the imbalances are significantly worse. We have to think about how we're going to pay for this debt, and there are ways to do it. One of them is creating inflation. The other way would be by suppressing cost of capital, allowing the government to sustain in this environment. The third one maybe is increasing tax rates, and I think that's yet to come here. We're going to see tax rates today. I mean, throughout history, we've had that being very linked to debt to GDP ratios, and today we have debt to GDP ratios at all-time highs, basically, and at a time when tax rates are historically low. And so, one of the two is wrong, and I think it's tax rates. I think that's headed that will go higher here, from here, especially for the richer parts of the society. And so, like it or not, I'm just claiming what history shows is that when you have macro events, large macro events that cause debt to GDP to rise, usually you see an increase in tax rates too. So yes, I do believe we're going to see yield curve control. I think it's going to be a part of the narrative. If you look at the amount of issuances happening, the fiscal agenda is so extensive right now. You got the Green Revolution happening at the same time as this peak inequality issues with the government trying to fund the lower classes in different forms. And then you have this infrastructure development happening at the same time. And now on top of it, you have the defense spending in order to as a way of all the issues we're seeing with deglobalization, with geopolitical tensions and wars and so forth. And so it's hard to believe the fiscal spending is not going to continue to be high. I mean, current account plus fiscal spending relative to GDP has been somewhere close to now at the levels that are at the worst levels of the global financial crisis of 08. And so, it's still very, very significant what we're seeing when it comes to government spending and On top of it, you have imports higher than exports in a larger degree, starting to become a problem as well. So the twin deficit is what creates this hole in the government side that forces the government to continue to issue more treasuries to fund their operations. And the issuance of treasuries was mostly purchased by the Fed. The Fed was buying about 50% of that, and you have the U.S. banks buying a big chunk of that too, and then you have foreign institutions. That's really the biggest drivers for the demand side of treasuries. And now we're seeing the three parts actually weakening. So you got treasuries, you got the Federal Reserve out of the picture. Now talking about becoming a seller, you have the U.S. banks buying the lowest amounts that we've seen relative to issuances in the last 3 to 4 years. That's very small relative to one of the largest issuances we've seen in history. And the third one has been the foreign institutions, where with the geopolitical issues and the problems that we had with Russia in particular, of a lot of central banks now perhaps not going to be buyers of treasuries anymore. And so those issues are playing a role into driving the supply side of treasuries much higher, and therefore causing yields to rise from here. And then on top of it, you have inflation being a lot more persistent than I would say anybody else ever thought. And so I think yields are headed higher until we hear something along the lines of, we're going to need some sort of yield curve control. And yields rising cost of capital to rise, that costs the changes in market leadership from technology and hype over value names. And you don't want me to get into that, but it's a lot of a domino effect because of all this. But if at some point we're going to see yield curve control, in my opinion.
Okay, great. And that will be a really big catalyst for gold. Before we get there, the Fed right now is raising interest rates or hiking interest rates or talking about continuing to be really aggressive in that. Yeah. That in theory makes real interest rates more positive, or perhaps more accurate to say less negative, which tends to be bad for gold. Do you think that will continue to weigh on gold's price as a material factor in the near term?
Well, I think there is a bigger case here for gold in think about what happened in the 70s, for instance, when nominal yields were rising at the same time as gold prices are rising too. They're actually going in lockstep, meaning both of them are moving in the same direction throughout the whole decade, going up, extremely positively correlated too. Very different than a lot of people think. I think nominal rates are more correlated to gold than real rates at that time. And so perhaps that's going to be the case here, because central banks are now in a situation that they have to restore the credibility of their fiat currencies. And the only way to do that is to improve the quality of their international reserves. And so I think that we're going to see gold playing a bigger role into being that asset, the tangible asset that becomes an anchor one more time for fiat currencies. And so there is a potential where we can see some central banks selling treasuries in order to buy gold. I think there's certainly a case to be made for that. I mean, the central banks that have the best credibilities out there today are the ones that actually hold a significant amount of U.S. treasuries. I mean, it's insane to think that an institution of that degree would achieve that reputation by owning debt of another highly indebted economy. That's literally what treasuries are. And even funny that we call it treasuries too. but it's a debt instrument that most economies own in order to create credibility for their own fiat currencies as part of their international reserves. So back in the days, gold used to be a much more relevant part of the allocation of those international reserves. And today it's a very small relative to prior to the 70s and so forth. I think we're going to go back to that. I think the discipline, the lack of discipline decades are over. I think we're going to see things coming back. And that's what is going to be also shifting this excess liquidity problem that we've seen over the years. and the change in macro regime here that we're seeing right now. But it's all linked. And so I do believe, sure, you know, yields short term may cause some issues to gold for a week or 2 or 3 weeks. But I think over the long term, I think gold should perform very well. It's hard to believe gold is going to be at lower levels in 5 to 10 years from now. And so, I mean, that is the central part of my thesis.
Okay. So you think there are bigger tectonic forces in play than just what's happening there on the real interest rate side. All right. So, for folks watching the price having trickled down, and by the way, while I keep mentioning that gold has weakened since its highs this year, it's still up for the year. So when you compare that versus the stock market, the bond market, crypto, et cetera, you know, gold's still doing just fine versus those assets since the beginning of January. Yeah. But Tavi, I guess, where do you see things bottoming out and where do you see things from here? Like you just said, you see gold being higher in 5 years, but do you see it being a lot higher? And in your answer too, if you could address, you've said in the past, you think silver is the most underappreciated asset on the planet. Do you still think so?
I do. We just had one of the folks internally was in our company was worried about silver prices because it was down 15, 16 days in a row. In my view, I was excited about it because we had cash to deploy. And so we bought more. I don't know when it's going to bottom. I wish I had that crystal ball. I think the best thing that I think we've been doing is accumulate assets that we think are cheap. And so we've been in this search for silver assets for many, many years. And we've been accumulating in that front. We found great discoveries of silver in the past that we think that's one of the most asymmetric ways of being long gold. Gold looks extremely attractive too. Like you just said, I mean, gold usually tends to struggle when it hits new highs. We've had that run up through the risk-off trade and after the Ukraine and Russia war started. I do think that the bigger trend will be when yields reach unsustainable levels. I think that's when we're going to see this challenging moment for policymakers of when it comes to, there's a lack of understanding, Adam, when it comes to fiscal spending creating inflation today. I mean, it's quite the opposite. In the 60s and 70s, I think policymakers knew that more fiscal spending creates actually inflation. And today is quite the opposite. They think about spending more in order to fix the inflation problem. And this is not going to go well. And so why am I saying this? Is because the fiscal stimulus will continue to be very large, in my opinion. And if that's the case, it will continue to drive inflation higher too. And it will continue to drive issuances of treasuries higher as well. And so at some point, we're going to reach unsustainable levels of yields. I don't know when it's at. I mean, a lot of people ask me, when do you think the Fed is going to step in? Let them say it. I mean, you know, we know they're going to be very vocal. Once you hear one of the Fed members say, look, yields are becoming a problem. I mean, they shouldn't be a 3.5 or 4%. I mean, we need to do something about it. Then it's time to cover your treasury shorts. But until then, I think treasuries are going to continue to become a problem here over the medium term. So that's going to be the next narrative. And once we see that shift, I think gold is going to really start performing, not just perform well, but perform really well. It's going to be probably the leading asset in global macro markets in general.
Okay, leading assets in global markets in general. I believe that silver will slingshot along for that ride. Correct me if you feel differently, but let's get into, I'm looking at the time here and realizing I've just taken up a ton more of your time than I initially promised. So I want to try to be efficient in getting through these last questions, but they're important. They're ones that people I know are really interested in. So you've just made a good case for how gold and silver will likely appreciate going forward. How to play that? Well, you can own gold and silver directly. You can also own the miners. We've talked a fair amount about the mining sector in our previous conversation last time you were on here, I think in November. And folks, if you haven't watched that, I'll put up a link to it right here. We go really deep into sort of the structure of the mining, the precious metal mining sector. But Tavi, we got a lot of people watching right now who I think are smarting. You know, they've got some stinging wounds from the past couple of, say, past 2 months or so. Especially over the past month, as the miners have really kind of been taken out behind the woodshed yet again. It happens a lot in the sector. And so a lot of them are just wondering, like, okay, has something, you know, material changed? And am I now holding on to a loser? Or is this just a volatile industry that's gone through a correction and, you know, is going to have a rebound at some point in time? So give us your thoughts on mining at you know, at a high level, and then I want to ask you some questions about what you're putting money into today.
Well, look, the liquidation in markets have been impacting all parts, all the industries, and certainly precious metals have been part of that too. The only way you made money in the last few weeks has been if you were long the dollar, really. Not even treasuries made you money. So it was very difficult, and precious metals companies, even the more illiquid ones, suffered drastically in the last weeks. They also went through a period of issuing a lot of shares, raising capital so they can drill. That's the business they're in when it comes to exploration. They dilute themselves to then look for gold and silver, base metals, whatever they're looking for. And when they find, those companies tend to perform very well and go exponentially higher. So we had a season of capital raising more recently that also put even further downward pressure in a lot of those shares. That is, out of the way now. And we've got precious metals extremely oversold today, technically speaking. So I think it's a great time to be allocating capital here. But that's just my opinion. You know, I continue to do that because I believe in the thesis. And it's funny, Adam, because retail investors suffer from one thing. You can copy someone's macro thesis, but if you haven't done the work, your conviction level is much lower. So when the thesis doesn't work in the short term, you immediately have that lack of confidence drives your decisions to sometimes sell the asset. And so while someone who actually has done the work have that intuition to actually continue to add capital towards that thesis because you've done the work and you believe strongly that that's going to be in a different price, whatever, 1 or 2 years from now. And so I would think that I've done the work and I continue to, work very hard to work on my thesis and make sure that everything is intact and we haven't seen any changes. That's certainly what I spend most of my time on. But that's the issue with retail investors is you're always allowed to copy someone's thesis, but you're not capable of copying their conviction to that thesis. And so and that's going to be a big, that's going to be a big process to be successful in markets. I think it's creating that conviction and taking advantage of volatility over time. At least that's been my experience of watching what's happening around us.
That's really important. And I'm glad you expressed that, to help folks understand. And we've been talking a lot about on this channel recently as the markets have gotten whipsawed, that our emotions tend to be our worst enemies when it comes to investors. They pressure us to make the wrong decisions at the exact wrong time. As I've long said to people, when it comes to investing in mining stocks, highly volatile industry, there's a lot of companies that aren't going to end up doing well. And so unless you're highly experienced already investing in this space, you're much better off working under the guidance of someone like yourself who lives and breathes this industry and is building a basket of what should be the much better, might have a much higher percentage of potential winners in it, right? Mm-hmm. So hopefully most people who have bought into the mining, space are following the lead of somebody like you. But to your point, they'll never have the same conviction as you because you're doing all the work. You know all the data that underlies your conviction. And it's important for you to come on here and say, I'm still as committed to this space as I was. Because if you weren't, that would be really material for people. If you said, hey, look, things have changed. It's, you know, invalidated some of my theories here and my core assumptions, and I need to now start changing my models. Right. That would be really material. But I don't hear you saying that. I hear you saying, nope, you know, everything that I thought about this space is still relatively the same.
That's right.
Okay, that's great. All right. Well, in beginning to wrap up here, are there particular companies right now that you're able to talk about that you feel are particularly, you know, attractive to you right now, at least based upon the metrics that you look at?
Yeah, I think there are companies that are putting out great results that are not being rewarded by the market right now. Snowline Gold is one of them. Goliath Resources is another one. SK Mining has been, you know, continues to be one of our highest conviction ideas, and it's been really sold off recently. And so,
Can you just say that again a little more slowly?
SK Mining, ESK is the ticker, ES as a Sam K.
Okay, great. So you said they've been hit hard recently.
Oh yeah. Labrador Gold is another one, right by Newfound Gold. It's another company we've been adding to our positions as, in our opinion, they're probably onto something similar to Newfound Gold. And it's been another company that have suffered from the market reaction recently. Now we got Zacapa. It's more of a copper name as well. Zacapa, I think the ticker is Zaka. Western Alaska is an interesting one as well. I think we've added significantly here in the last few weeks or so. I'm trying to remember. There are a lot more names in my mind, but it's Eloro Resources we've added recently too. I mean, they're onto something massive. I mean, in a bull market, this company should not be trading where it is right now.
Okay, I'm sorry, Tavi, what was the name of that last one?
Eloro Resources.
Eloro, and how do you spell that?
E-L-O-R-O, Eloro.
Okay, great. They're onto something massive, you think?
Yeah, it's a polymetallic deposit as well. It's in Bolivia. I think I've mentioned this one before too, but it's a well-run company. Been extremely successful recently with their exploration programs. We've been buying we've had a large stake in the company, and we've been buying a little bit here in the markets too. Let's think. There are other, you know, Novo Resources. We continue to buy more Novo. I mean, Novo is trading almost, their assets, if you subtract cash, are trading at ridiculous levels right now. Producing mine, probably trading. If you look at net cash, I think they're probably trading 1 to 2 times free cash flow today. Mm. In Australia, safe jurisdiction. Sounds interesting to us, so we continue to add to that name as well. We've got a lot more going on, but it's those are some of the companies. Kingfisher is a company that wasn't as successful last year, but they've got an amazing ground, good team. Exploration takes time, and it's okay to make mistakes, and we continue to like their assets, and we think they're going to perform very well as long as the management and technical team is aligned with the exploration that they're going after, that we agree with. We continue to support them in a large way. Cassiar Gold had a big pullback recently. Cassiar is another company we've been supporting that we think will do very well. Pacific Ridge is my last one that I'm going to say. Pacific Ridge is another company that we own about 20% of them, and it's another one to be watching for. We've added to our position more recently. I mean, Adam, I think we had one of the biggest investments in the last month. I think we put money to work to a degree that we haven't done in any other month. And so we've been very busy with a lot of new deals and a lot of funding for different purposes in different parts of the world. And so it's been a busy season for us.
Wow. All right. Well, look, Tommy, first off, thank you so much for being so specific and sharing so many names there for our viewers to go out and research. It's exactly the kind of things people like to get on this video. So thank you. And I think the fact that you've just said that you are deploying more capital, you've deployed more capital in the past month than you have perhaps in most other past periods, really shows the level of confidence and conviction you have right now in terms of the prospects for this sector. So thank you. It is worth reminding people that, you know, Tavi, you were talking about exploration, precious metals mining companies, which you should hear as, you know, risky, yet high reward potential. So folks, this shouldn't be, you know, the bulk of your retirement money by any stretch you're putting in here. You should be putting, you know, only a percentage of your portfolio that you can afford to live without if the trade goes against you. But there's high potential for return here if things go right. Tavi's nodding as I'm saying all this. Also, Tavi and his team there at Crescat, they manage funds for investors where they're building the basket of what they think are the best companies here. Tavi, correct any of this if it's wrong, but you're able to make both public and private investments in these companies. So your fund is you know, buying private offerings and things like that the average investor can't necessarily take advantage of. So you're hopefully increasing your potential return by, you know, getting even a sweeter deal in certain cases than what the average person can get just by buying it on a public exchange. So Tavi, for folks that want to learn more about you and your company and also who want to follow your work just on an ongoing basis, where should they go?
Very easy. I think on Twitter, Tavi Costa or @TaviCosta is my handle. If they wanted to learn about Crescat, is crescat.net. And you can see lots of very in-depth letters when it comes to our macro views. But also you can find all the information about the funds. And one good thing about our website is very transparent, as all information you need when it comes to details of the structure of the funds, but also anything regarding our ideas. And we might actually have a page now with all the companies that we have invested that are we have already published or publicly shared with folks in general, and there are going to be lots of interviews of our different ways that we presented those cases for each of those companies that we have in our portfolio, with Quentin Henney doing all the explanation. So stay tuned for that. That should be a good resource of information in general.
Yeah, please let me know when that's up and live, because that will be a fantastic resource. And for folks, Quentin is one of the most storied and successful geological mining experts out there in this space. And I have watched a number of videos you guys have put together, Tavi, where you guys are, you know, having a conversation with him about, okay, so what excites you about this company? And he goes into the drill results, he goes into the management background. It's a super deep dive. So that's going to be a great resource when it's up and live. All right, well, Tavi, look, thanks so much for giving us so much time today and so much detail. It's always wonderful having these conversations with you. Look forward to having you back on this program again soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Adam.
All right. Well, now is the time in the program where we bring in the lead partners from New Harbor Financial, one of the endorsed financial partners here, financial advisory firms that Wealthion partners with. I am joined today by Mike Preston from New Harbor. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Adam. Nice to see you. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, it's great. Okay. And I know that John couldn't meet with us here today, so you're going to be doing the heavy lifting. A lot of material there from Tavi. You know, lots going on in the markets too, which I want to get to in detail with you here. But first, any particular reaction to what Tavi just said there?
Well, that was a great talk, Adam. Tavi gave so much detail, really was generous with his time. And, you know, we here at New Harbor, we really do respect what Crescat does and what they've been doing for a long time. I think I know you mentioned their website there, Crescat. I think it's crescatcapital.com, or you can just Google
Crescat.net. But yeah, we'll
Crescat.net. They produce really good research and good charts, and I would encourage people that are interested in good data to take a look at it. We've been following them for a long time. So really have a lot of respect for them and really agree with a lot of what Tavi was talking about there, Adam. You know, he basically says he thinks that we're at the beginning of a bear market in equities. I think so too. The Wilshire 5000, which is probably the broadest measure of the stock market, topped in November. The S&P topped January 4th. So here we are, five or six months into a market that likely topped. And it seems like the world is maybe finally just starting to wake up to the fact that, hey, we're in a downtrend. There may be some risk here. You know, Tavi's got some concern about a recession. I certainly wouldn't doubt a recession. I'm not sure that we can really predict one, or I'm not even sure that we care if we predict one or not. What we really look at are market signals, and the market signals have been screaming caution for a long time. Buy the dip is changing, or like Tavi said, buy the dip is gone now, at least so far. Anyone that's bought the dip this year has seen lower lows over and over and over again. That's a completely different dynamic than the previous 10 years plus. And I can see it watching the screen, watching the market. Even earlier today, the market was defending the 4,000 level in the S&P. It's a little bit below there at the moment. And I could just see the buy the dip buying come in over and over and over and over again. And when that happens, generally speaking, there's going to be a little bit of a dam break or a burst to the downside. It's kind of what I'm expecting. As we've said here, I think on this program, we're kind of expecting 3,800 plus or minus a little bit on the first leg down. We'll see. There's no guarantees about the future, but certainly that dynamic is changing, and we agree with Tavi on that. Yeah, he talked a lot about commodities, a commodities boom. Crescat actually puts out a nice chart that shows how undervalued commodities are relative to broad financial markets like the S&P. And we're talking about a 10 plus year low, and we're swinging back the other direction. This outperformance of commodities is not likely to be quick or a flash in the pan. It's likely to be 10 or 20 years in duration. And this really fits well with what your guest last week said, Michael Avery, who said, you know, that we're going to be facing commodity shortages, supply shortages for a long time. So yeah, we want to maintain caution. Our equity exposure is very low. We will be tactical on what we think are technical bounce points to add a little bit of equity exposure. I'm sure we might talk about gold in a little bit here too, but we're still bullish on gold, even with the pullback and commodity relating producing stocks. And I'll pause there.
All right. Well, yeah, I figured you must have taken some heart from what Tavi was saying about, you know, the prospects that he saw, not just for the underlying precious metals, gold and silver, but also for the mining complex. Because as I understand still, the largest long positions in New Harbor portfolios, I believe, is still the metals and the miners, correct?
Absolutely true. We've got a core position in miners. We've got a good hedge on there, so we don't have any downside risk anymore in miners. And we also have an ETF that holds basic material producing stocks, as well as another one that holds oil service stocks as well. So it's all commodity producers and miners for the most part for the equity exposure.
Okay, and that you pretty much just listed off the very things that Tavi said that his fund is is long right now, you know, offsetting the shorts that they have on the many shorts, I guess they have. All right, so let's talk about the market action, because it's been completely bonkers. we've had the S&P crack below 4,000, which was a really important technical level. It's been trying to reclaim the four handle again, and it's closed above and below the past 2 days. Today, every time I check the market, it's either, you know, up 1% or down 1%. When we started recording, we were up more than 1%. I just briefly looked at it. We're down nearly 1% now in the S&P. So it's crazy. I mean, I think investors are just, you know, I feel like they must feel like they're standing in the middle of like a highway with traffic zooming, you know, in all different directions around them, trying to figure out where things are going. The crypto complex has been just murdered right now. Bitcoin is under $30,000 as I'm talking here. Again, it was dipped under 30,000, was up at around 31 and a half when we started recording this. It's now back with a 29 handle. So, and it's lost, the crypto complex itself, I just saw, has lost over $800 billion in the past month of market value. I mean, just a massive wipeout. And how much lower may it go? Who knows? There's some real scary stuff going on right now with one of the leading stable coins. Interesting days in the cryptoverse, but bonds continue to remain under pressure. Stocks continue to remain under pressure. Gold and silver holding in there today, which is nice. But as we've been talking about, they've kind of been coming down the past 2 weeks or so. Though I do want to underscore that they are, or gold at least, is still green for the year to date. So hopefully it maintains that for folks. So Mike, this has got to be a really challenging time to be managing capital. So I'd love for you to comment on that, but I do want to give you guys the props that given your positioning coming into this year, you've been much less impacted by this than the general indices themselves, correct?
Yeah, we're roughly even, Adam. It's been challenging because we had a little bit of gains because of the move that gold miners made, when GDX, which is, a proxy that we often quote for what gold miners do, was above 40. It's fallen very quickly down to the low 30s. I mean, really quickly. Thankfully, we have a hedge on board that negates any further downside risk, but that took away a few percent of portfolio performance. But we still maintain.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I do just want to point out for folks, and I'll let you continue with the, yes, it hurts to lose the gains that we had earlier in the year, but you are still flat to, maybe up a tiny bit. The S&P is down, negative 15 or more?
I think it might be minus NASDAQ's 16 right now.
Yeah, negative 16. The NASDAQ's down negative 20 something. Crypto's, like I said, I think Bitcoin's down negative 38% or something like that for the year to date. So, staying flat is pretty amazing compared to the losses I just rattled off there.
We certainly want to make gains for our clients. And we hope to have that opportunity. We think that opportunity will come at lower levels of the S&P. As I mentioned earlier, we've got the support shelf at 4,000 on the S&P that keeps whipping back and forth. You can see market participants trying to catch that turn. I personally think that it'll break. It will have a little bit of I don't want to say panic, but it'll be the first whiff of, real fear in the market. That could be a place for a technical bounce for a little trade that's hedged. We'd like to have more opportunities to make gains for people, but we've been dealing with a hyper overvalued market that's been facing ever-present crash risk the whole time. So we're making sure that we're running a capital preservation portfolio. And furthermore, if gold recovers and takes off, that will also be a nice tailwind. That just hasn't happened yet. But absolutely, we're primarily concerned on not taking much downside capture. We can't ever promise no downside capture, but we're really cognizant about the fact that we want to minimize that and then be tactical on the long side, in different sectors or even broad stock market indexes when we think the market can bounce.
All right, great. I want to talk about one other position of yours that we've talked about the past couple of weeks. As you guys had said that you were building a position in TLT, which is a long U.S. Treasury ETF, because that you were expecting at least sort of a near-term bounce in that index. And the index has been continuing to drift down and down and down with the entire bond complex. As Tavi started our interview with him saying that traditional safe havens were not acting like such, and he cited Treasuries as an example of that. I do want to note that on the day we're talking, TLT is bouncing pretty hard here. So you may be finally getting the action that you had been expecting to see here.
Yeah, we expect a bigger bounce in long-term bonds, and TLT is a good way to track that because TLT owns U.S. Treasury bonds that have a maturity of greater than 20 years. But this has been a vicious sell-off in bonds. You mentioned earlier in this program that I think that this is one of the worst starts, or if not the worst start to a year ever for bonds. Bonds are down roughly 25% or 20 to 25%. And stocks, as measured by the S&P, are down 16%. So there's been nowhere to hide. We think, though, that the move up in yields, and that like a 10-year yield has recently hit as high as I think 3.2. is slightly overdone. The bond market is really trying to bake into the cake all of the expected hikes by the Federal Reserve. And the bond market is a huge, huge multi-trillion, very liquid market. And so not everyone's going to agree on this, but our call was that bond yields were going to stop going up, at least for a little while. We were a little early. And so we entered a long position in long-term bonds, i.e. TLT. We hedged it with a call option that helped defray being early. We actually added another little piece, maybe a couple of weeks ago. We adjusted our hedge because we can buy back a short call option. We can sell another one lower and bring more premium in. We don't try to pick an ultimate bottom. That's generally impossible to do. What we do is keep taking premium, build that position, lower the cost basis, and wait for the bounce. Now we're seeing a bounce, and I won't say that it's, I'm just taking a peek at the chart. It doesn't get us quite back to in the black, but we don't, with that type of trade, it's not a technical-based trade. It's a fundamental belief that things have gone a little too far. You wouldn't buy a chart like TLT on a technical belief because the chart looks like, it looks terrible. But I think it'll bounce a little bit further. I think that trade will be profitable, but we have patience in hedges to sit through what will be a basing process. Might be a few months.
All right, great. And I can't say that this is the reason for the bounce in TLT today, but we did just get the April CPI numbers today. And CPI, the number is a little bit lower than it was the month before. So we've been talking in past weeks about how I had thought, and I think you guys thought similarly, that there was a decent chance that that reported CPI had peaked in March, and that April we were expecting, wouldn't be surprised, we said, to see a lower number come in, and one has just printed, right? Now, it's not very much lower, you know, inflation's still pretty darn hot, but what that may be putting the idea in the market's mind here is, hey, you know what? Maybe CPI is peaking and the CPI numbers are going to start coming down here. And that's going to give the Fed a little bit of air cover to not have to be as aggressive hiking rates. And then, that then basically begins to take some of the pressure coming off of the bond market sell-off here. So too early to tell whether that's the case, but this might be, you know, one of the indicators that oversold TLT was looking for to be able to bounce a rally off of.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. This is a technical trade over a period of a few months, in our view. I think Tavi said earlier in the talk that he thought that there'd be pressure on yields to go higher over time. I think he's probably right. I think that he and I might be talking about two different time frames. You know, I expect a bounce. Yeah,
so you know, I didn't have Tavi talk about this. He actually has taken off his UST shorts in the short term and is now long TLT as well. So he's expecting the same oversold bounce as you and I have been talking about.
Perfect.
Yeah. And I think he long-term like us think, hey, there's so many structural secular issues that are going to continue driving yields up, you know, in the long-term here, just because they're going to have to rise to compensate for the greater risk.
Agree. Totally agree. Yep. Just different time frames. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, in beginning to wrap it up here, Mike. Lots of reasons that Tavi mentioned, both, macro as well as what's happening in the industry, to be really bullish here on the precious metals going forward. And I just want to underscore for folks that enjoyed that interview with him and want to take action on this. You can invest in the mining stocks. Those are a lot more speculative. You get greater return if gold does well, but you get greater losses if things don't. There's also just company risk that can come into play. So, you know, a more safe way to play the appreciation in the precious metal space is just to own the precious metals themselves, right? I know you guys help clients do that. If you're watching this, folks, and you want to add to your precious metal exposure, there are two real easy ways to do that I've mentioned on this program before. If you want to buy bullion and have it sent to you to store yourself, hold it in your hands, go to wealthion.com/gold-silver. And if you want to buy gold or silver and have it stored for you in a Brinks vault of your choice in select spots around the world, go to wealthion.com/HAA. That stands for Hard Assets Alliance. Reason why I'm mentioning those here is for two reasons. One is they're a great solution for exactly what I just mentioned. If you want to get gold in your hands, or if you want to own enough gold that you don't want to keep it on your house because it's a theft risk or a loss risk, then you know, have it stored for you remotely somewhere in a very safe place. But I'm also mentioning this because if you're watching this and you're a financial advisor, and I know that a number of you who watch this are financial advisors because you email me about it, the company that runs both Gold Silver and the HAA, that runs the platform, is conducting a webinar next week on how to use their platform to help buy, sell, and store precious metals for your clients yourself. And if you're interested in using their platform, it's a world-class enterprise platform that services a number of Wall Street's banks and broker-dealers, in particular, two of the top four. I can't mention the names for marketing purposes, but they are massive big banks that you guys know well. If you want to learn about how to participate in that free webinar, just send an email to info@wealthion.com. And again, that one's for financial advisors specifically. And Mike, you guys at New Harbor have used this platform before, this one for financial advisors that I'm talking about, right?
Yes, indeed we have, Adam. We have.
All right. All right, great. Well, look. All right. So moving on from that and wrapping up here, Mike, I'm going to let you have the last word as usual, because, you know, you guys are my pulse on, you know, the people here. You're talking to real live people multiple times every day when they call in for those free consultations with you, or if they're an existing client of yours. I got to imagine this has got to be a really emotionally charged time for people, given all the mayhem in the markets. What parting advice would you have for people that are watching and just trying to stay on top of what's going on here and not lose their minds?
Well, there's been a definite change in character of some of these conversations the last couple of weeks with not people that are clients, but just people that, you know, decide to set up a call with us and want to have a conversation. A number of these people that are invested in the market are starting to feel the psychological pressure of this relatively slow drip lower that's been happening since either November or January, depending upon how you measure it. And it's just the psychological process of thinking about a loss. You know, it's interesting to talk to people and they say, oh my goodness, I'm losing all this money. Because in an investor's mind, when their account hits a high watermark, that's their money. And indeed, that's true. It is their money at that moment, but it's impossible.
Only if they were to sell then, but yes.
You can never pick the total top tick, you know? And this is the same group of investors that's most of the time has ridden the market up most of the way, if not all of the way, the last bunch of years. So in other words, there's been a monstrous big move up in the market, and it gave back just a teeny weeny little bit. But the way that investors think, the way that human beings think, probably more correctly, is that, well, gee, I lost that money, I'll sell when it gets back up there. And that's been a good thing to do, to kind of wade and drag your feet, because, well, hey, the Fed kept bailing everything out, kept going back to new highs. One of these times it won't, maybe, and I think probably, this time it won't. And so if you're down 15, 16% from the high, but you tripled your money the last bunch of years, what's the difference? I would argue that even some of those gains were an overshoot or a blow off top. So here's the advice: start to do something, because people freeze and then they start to go through the five stages of grief, you know, disbelief, anger, bargaining, eventually to acceptance. I've been in this business since the 90s. Acceptance happens somewhere like 50, 60, 70% below here if we were to have that kind of market. And the worst thing that you want to do is to capitulate at that time. The best thing to do is to look at your allocations right now and set them to something that you're willing to sit with no matter what happens in the next 10 years. I can't predict what's going to happen, but if you're in a 60-40 or 80-20 portfolio, you may want to think about moving down the line to maybe a 30% stock portfolio. And we'd be happy to give you some tips on the phone to do that. And then stick with it. I mean, if you're going to invest yourself or passively index, totally okay with that. Just stick with it. Set it to what feels right now and then stick with it. So these are the conversations that we're having. We're trying to get people to move and sell a little bit or to change your allocations. And believe me, it feels better to just do a little something instead of freezing, because after you do a little something, you can do another little something, then another little something. So that's
A little bit of progress enables future progress. Mikey, your comments there make me think about, I should do an explainer video on the sunk cost fallacy, which, you know, makes sense. Basically what you're talking about here, where their brain remembers the all-time high and they think I'm down X from that. And so I just need to hold until I'm back there and then I'll make a change, right? Where, hey, what's happened in the past has happened in the past. What you need to do to be a good steward of your money is look at what you have right now and ask yourself, what's the very best next step for that, right? So anyways, one of the many benefits of working with a professional financial advisor who can kind of help you take the put the emotions aside and just think logically and strategically about what to do from here. Folks, as a reminder, as I say every week, especially given markets as crazy as they are right now, it is a very treacherous time for the average individual investor. You should be working under the guidance of a professional financial advisor who understands all the risks that we've been talking about in this program. If you've got a great one, stick with them. They're worth your weight in gold. If you don't, or you want a second opinion, talk to one of the ones that Wealthion endorses to find out who they are and set up a free, no strings attached, no commitment consultation with them. Just go to Wealthion.com or stick around to the end of the video. We give you all the details there. All right, Mike, look, thank you so much for joining me this week. Everybody else, thank you so much for watching. Again, if you're watching and you're a financial advisor, you want to see that webinar, just send me an email at info@wealthion.com. And no matter what happens in the markets from here, Mike, we'll be tracking it together here next week. Thanks so much for joining me. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.
As always, a pleasure, Adam. Thanks for having us back, and we'll see you soon. Look forward to it.
If you'd like to schedule a consultation with one of the financial advisors at New Harbor Financial, simply go to Wealthion.com. These consultations are completely free and there are no strings attached. The good folks at New Harbor will simply answer any questions you have about your investment goals or your portfolio and give you their best advice given their latest market outlook. They're willing to do this because they care about protecting people's wealth. And because Wealthion has connected them with so many thoughtful investors just like you over the past decade. We started doing this because so many people have approached us in frustration, looking for a solution because they're feeling out of alignment or downright ridiculed by the standard financial advisors who have been managing their money. You know the type. The kind that just pushes all of your money into the market, scoffs at the idea of owning gold, and when you bring up concerns about the market's sky-high valuations, they say, "Don't worry. The market will always take care of you." For many of the reasons discussed in today's video, we think this is one of the most challenging and treacherous times in history for investing. We strongly believe that today's investors are best served working in partnership with a conscientious professional financial advisor who understands the risks in play. Now, we're agnostic which professional advisor you work with, as long as they're good. If you're already working with one, that's fantastic. Stick with them. But if you don't, or are having trouble finding one you respect or trust, then consider talking to John and Mike and the team at New Harbor. Now, for those about to ask, yes, there's a business relationship between Wealthion and New Harbor, which we've put in place to make sure everything is handled according to SEC regulations. All the details on this are clearly provided on the Wealthion.com website. Also, it's important to note that New Harbor is able to work with U.S. citizens, green card holders, and those with existing assets in the USA. But for regulatory reasons, they aren't able to take on non-U.S. clients. All right, with all that said, if you'd like some insight and guidance on how to protect your wealth during this unprecedented time in the markets, go to Wealthion.com to schedule your free consultation with the good folks at New Harbor. Thanks for watching.